Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku Episode 57. We are a group of four bubblegum crisis boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey, I'm Nick.
Hey, I'm Sam.
Hey, all, I'm Mike.
And I'm your host tonight, Dylan. This episode's being recorded on the 5th of September, 2024. And as we enter into the fall season, we'll be discussing Junji Ito, with probably more of a focus on Uzumaki and other related things. There may be some thematic spoilers in Uzumaki. We'll try to keep that to a minimum. But with that, I say Hashin. So, Junji Ito is a well-known manga author, has been actively writing since roughly 1987. He, at the time, was a dental technician and was reasonably successful as a dental technician, and started to kind of write some horror manga stuff on the side. He submitted and won the Kazuo Umez Award. Kazuo Umez is the godfather of horror manga, going back to the 70s with some just incredible stuff, including the Wandering Classroom, and what's it, Catboy,
yeah.
Tons of really, really cool stuff. If you want to read something, it's can feel very different.
The Viz edition of the Drifting Classroom is actually fantastic. I picked it up. I haven't bought it yet, but I saw it at Barnes & Noble. And it's hardcover, and the pages have a kind of slightly almost yellowed look. I would call it maybe more like a natural look, but it's really high quality paper. It's really good. I want to read it.
Yeah. As well, just covering a couple stuff. Basically, if you want to read Junji Ito manga, get a subscription to the Viz manga online app, whatever, or there's plenty of his, a lot of his stuff is readily available and very nicely printed out if you want it that way as well. But if you want the widest selection with the minimum monthly dollar, give the Viz subscription, and that'll get you, as far as I know, like almost everything that's in English is on there of his.
Not the only weird thing for me is that they only take payment through the app, but
yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
Also, big complaint about the app that you can only download something for 7 days and then it auto-deletes.
Yeah, that's a standard thing there, which I assume because you had a trip to China and then other things, but it was longer than that and you couldn't be able to get on enough to re-have it save stuff longer.
Yeah, that was my use case.
Yeah, that sucks. That's probably... Trips to China, my guess would have to be that's probably the most common bad end use case. Because almost anywhere else that people are commonly traveling to, you have enough open internet that you could at least get online to be able to re-up your downloads.
Yeah, the Great Firewall is even relatively impenetrable to VPNs, because they're smart to those too. So there's only like a select few obscure ones that work flawlessly. Most of them only work partially. So
Ito's works have varied widely between doing a lot of kind of collected single story
one shot
stories, and most of his one shots, and a lot of his stuff, at least from like 87 up to about 95, ran in the magazine that I feel so crappy that I didn't know about and I wasn't into it at the time, which was Monthly Halloween.
I have to admit that's a great magazine name.
I know, yeah. It's fabulous. It kind of focused on, I guess, horror shoujo manga.
What?
That kind of tracks, actually. I'm not surprised, because I don't want to... We can return this later, but... As soon as I started reading Junji Ito's, I've always known who he was, but horror hasn't really ever been my thing until very, very recently, actually. And it was fortuitously timed because obviously we decided to do this topic. And as soon as I finished like the first maybe four chapters of Uzumaki, the first direct comparison to another author I thought of was Rumiko Takahashi, like as far as certain elements. We can go more into that later, but I feel like a lot of Ito's kind of stylistic choices actually lean towards more shoujo style.
Definitely agree.
That's just a personal opinion, but yeah, so it doesn't actually surprise me that's how he opted to, that's why they opted to put his stuff in Halloween, if that's kind of where they focused.
I do feel like if that magazine doesn't come with at least a kilo of candy, the name is a lie.
It was a monthly one. After a while, I think that magazine folded in the end of 95, and then his stuff moved over to, I think, Shonen Sunday, largely.
Sorry, when I imagine this Halloween, a magazine just for horror manga, like, you have to be a real fan, because, like, that's a lot of scary and dark and depression, like, all at once.
I mean, that's Japan in a nutshell. Like,
I mean, I guess.
People love that stuff.
And horror fans in a nutshell. Those people are out there, and they are very... I mean, we all know, not to mention the Halloween people, like, we know people who would subscribe to a Halloween magazine just about, you know, Halloween kitsch.
Yeah, sure, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's a lot.
I mean, some of the...
I'm actually kind of surprised there isn't a monthly Halloween magazine for people into Halloween, except for, you know, magazines kind of being a dying form.
Well, let's go into the horror thing, because I actually, for me, it's been in the last, I don't know, probably 5 years or so that I've become actually quite a big horror fan. I've watched so many movies. We just watched another one tonight that was quite good. Ouija Origin of Evil movie. Which is another Mike Flanagan movie, so U.S. one. Don't watch the... I think that we haven't watched the first one, but the second one is really cool, standalone, good Mike Flanagan kind of horror movie. But within the manga sphere of horror, and there's different things, different medium benefit horror in different ways, and I think in manga, it's one of the things that really stands out for Junji Ito's stuff is, I think almost more than the written word, and certainly more than film, is you have to continuously volunteer yourself to go to the next page.
Yeah.
And with that, you also control the pace of when you go to the next page and how quickly, you know, these days, if it's on digital, you don't control how quickly you turn the page over. But there definitely is still that anticipation of, oh, boy, what am I going to turn myself into here? What am I going to see next?
Mm-hmm. It's that mixture of wanting to know what happens next, but they're kind of worried about what it's going to be.
I feel Ito's work is kind of a great example of how a property or properties are not necessarily meant for every kind of medium, because I am of the opinion that Ito's works really cannot be adapted to any sort of video format, be it animated or live action, and have the intended effect of what he was trying to invoke in the reader, because I feel like how Ito kind of designs his, for lack of a better term, shots, is really similar to like how Samura does his like Blade of the Immortal like executions. Like, there is a build up to effectively a full two page spread of a, lack of a better term, visually horrifying sight that I feel like the act of like either turning the page or, you know, shifting the screen at the reader's pace and seeing it appear, you know, in frame that suddenly is part of the experience. And I don't think it's something that you can replicate in the visual medium, like of video or film. And I think that's a significant reason why his stuff historically has not worked in animation or live action.
So let's dig in on that, and we can take the short ones to go. So there have been a couple of different anime version stuff. There's actually been a lot of live action
really
things. There's been like
what's the live action?
Ugh.
There's been there's been 9 Tomie movies.
Okay.
There was a Uzumaki live action film that was made in 2000. There's been a bunch of other, I think, shorter individual ones. I haven't seen everything, but it's not like there's been nothing. There's been quite a good amount of it done. And in some ways, I'm kind of annoyed that most of the Tomie stuff is not available in the U.S. Because I'm very curious to see how that works. Because the Tomie, whole Tomie series, they are effectively largely all one-shots. And they just kind of focus on people's relation to this girl, Tomie, who is... It's a really cool series because she's this kind of interesting character where she's horrible and super vain and wants all these things, and everyone is driven to love her and then to literally cut her into pieces.
Okay.
And there's different endings with each different chapter. So I can see how that is very much like, oh yeah, we got to make movies out of this. We can do so much with it.
Well, now I got to read that.
I haven't seen those. Yeah, it's really... Tomie is, just an aside there, Tomie is very interesting because it's his first work, and it's really fun because as you read it, you see his art style completely change and develop as the series goes on, such that by the time you get to Uzumaki, which was done in 98 and 99, he'd been working full-time as a manga artist, I think, for... at least 7 or 8 years by then. His art style was pretty consistent. He was able to have a consistent art style within Uzumaki, mm-hmm. whereas it definitely shifts all throughout Tomie, which is kind of cool too.
That's cool to see that. I love those things where you can kind of see the growth of the creator throughout it as you read.
Definitely. That's one of the that was one of the favorite parts of reading like manga over a long period of time as well.
Yeah.
I did have, so Tomie aside, I did watch the Uzumaki movie. It is available, in the US subtitled on Prime Video.
Lots of CG, I guess.
Yeah, lots of CG. It was also one where I think when they started to do the movie, the manga still wasn't over.
Oh.
So they didn't really have a complete story there. And there's way too many different stories in Uzumaki to fit into an hour and a half long movie.
Definitely. Yeah. It would have to be more like a miniseries, like a, you know, like a 10-ep, like 1 hour miniseries to tell the story correctly, in my opinion.
Right. And so they,
I feel like you could do it.
And they shoved, you could do it if you really focused and you tried to focus on like a couple of the stories and just threw everything else out.
Yeah.
And they kind of didn't do that. They tried to focus on like, there's like 5 different things and they all get very weird. And then there's limitations you can tell from their budgetary constraints and what they had there. And then there's just some acting and character choices that are done. Like, the actor that plays, you know, I'll say the actor that plays cause it's their final thing, but, the main guy, Ryuichi, I mangled his name there.
Shuichi? Are we talking about Shuichi. The male lead? Yeah, Shuichi.
Yes, Shuichi. He seemed so... I did not like his casting and portrayal in that movie at all. I thought it was just... It did not seem good
to me. To compartmentalize, Dylan, your general opinion of the live-action Uzumaki was it was bad, yeah?
Yes, bad. That would be one word to summarize.
That's the thing. That's the running thing. I have to be fair. I've only watched the most recently released Junji Ito I guess, animated thing, which was his collection.
Is that the Maniac one?
Yeah, I believe so.
And is that the one that I tried to watch a few eps of, and eh?
If you watched it within the last 2 years, it would be that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, very much to Mike's point. It was pretty, eh. Not the worst thing I watched, but just didn't really feel like... It was paced weird, and I just didn't... Something didn't feel right. And that's when I started to kind of investigate the history of Junji Ito things. And like you said, Dylan, across the last 20 years, quite a lot of his stuff was tried to be adapted, but like critically speaking, none of those adaptations did well at all.
Yeah.
Domestically in Japan, let alone out in the... in, you know, the rest of the world. Even though at that point, I would say Junji Ito started to become prolific outside of Japan. I think he's really exploded in the last 5 years, I'd say.
Definitely.
In the U.S., probably.
Probably even and a little bit more, but yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, just a little more than that.
Probably like 8 years.
Maybe yeah. Sam, were you at Crunchyroll Expo the year he was there?
Yeah, yeah. I have a picture next to this exhibit thing they had, too.
Yeah, his gallery was really cool, seeing the originals for some of those pages.
Yeah. Ooh,
that's awesome.
And to that point, the first thing I immediately think of is, if you try to live action any of his stuff, you're immediately losing one of the most critical aspects of Ito, which is his art style, right? Like, his art style is so iconic and, like, just, it's visually strike, especially when he does, for again, what I call his shots, like when he does his big, you know, like, you know, for each given story he usually has like a, you know, a very, like a full page spread of something horrifying, like there's yeah. no way you can reproduce that kind of stuff live action, even with today's absurd CG. There's too much lost detail to be lost. That goes back to my point of, I feel like sometimes not all stories can or need to be retold through like video medium. Some of the stuff is just best left on the pages.
So here, have you thought about turning Junji Ito in a 5-on-5 hero battle game? I'm sure it'll do well.
I think you can adapt that stuff. But I do agree that like a big part of it, I mean, with most manga, I think this tends to be true, is that the visual aspect of it is hugely important. And with something like horror manga, I think that's doubly important. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do think that some of these things, like Uzumaki especially, I think it lends itself well to, you can tell, since there is a big overarching story instead of kind of a bunch of loosely connected one-shots like a lot of his work, you can adapt it if you focus it. It can be difficult. And like when you have something like Gyo, which there's enough of a whole story there too to tell a good solid hour and a half movie. But you have to also put a certain amount of care into it, which I think I don't think people have done at all ever. Like, especially Gyo.
Yeah, and it's almost like it's a curse, right? Like, which is ironic given, you know, the writer and his content. But like, I feel like so many people and places and studios have tried, and nobody has even been able to make, I would say, a palatable interpretation of his work yet. I mean,
so let's go in that for a second, because literally today, this afternoon, they released a final after, gosh, I don't know, at least 5 years of partial trailers and stuff, supposedly a final first trailer for a new animated version of Uzumaki that is supposed to be start airing, I think, at the 29th of September. So the trailer's out there. Spoiler warning on the trailer. There's a lot of spoilers in the trailer. But having read it, what is our overall feeling of the actual... what you can gain from that, from looking at the art style and anything else you can figure from it?
Sam, would you like to go first?
I'll say up front that I only, like, I skimmed it as we were talking, so I didn't have the audio on. I'm evaluating it purely visually. At parts, I feel like it looked good, but then when I paid more attention, it actually looked terrible. So like there, it may be a mix. It's possible that there's a mix of like some stuff that's good, but like it looks like it's, they're carrying it a lot, largely with CG for a good portion of this. So
yeah,
it doesn't look very good at all.
I will say, I do agree with a lot of what you're saying. Like certain cuts where it's like a slow pan, I was like, oh, this actually looks pretty good. Like I was like this, and I do like the decision, intentional decision to keep it black and white and kind of have the manga, like the line artness to it. Mm-hmm. Until you realize a lot of it is kind of like a weird filter they put on it, so it's kind of lazy, and it is a lot of CGI, which I mean I get, but man, imagine like if just for a second, if like Prime Studio 4C got to do this.
Oh like, yeah,
how like the detail, you know, but again, I don't want to, woulda, coulda, shoulda it, but
I would want this to have the $11 jillion to draw every one of those lines every cell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can, again, I think from a stylistic standpoint, it is probably the most accurate interpretation of Ito's art in another visual medium, but I still don't think it's great looking.
It's one of those things that looks good in a still, but not in motion.
Exactly. Which takes me back to the, why not just keep it in manga?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that'll get better as you get watch more and get used to it, but...
I feel like it's also one of those things where 2D animation, I think they're very good these days with kind of various filters and things that if you can do that kind of black and white style with 2D animation, and it would look a lot better than I think just putting that over 3D CG.
Mm-hmm.
But
I agree.
I don't know. Yeah,
I'll still at least give it a shot because at least based on the very spoilery trailer, it looks like it's going to be quite plot accurate. So I am interested to see how certain parts are interpreted in the animated medium. Like obviously if you look at the key art for the trailer, like front and center is the I can't remember the character's name, but the probably one of the most iconic cuts in any of Ito's work, the spiral on the forehead with the loose eyeball, like true nightmare fuel. I mean,
yeah,
just one of the most eerie and, you know, hauntingly terrifying kind of things to see. Like when you see the eyeball kind of spiraling inward in the cut, I'm like, wow, I can imagine this being really cool to look at if it wasn't really bad CG. But will I watch it, at least part of it? Yeah, because
totally.
I have a vested interest in it now. So, you know, and I do want somebody to keep trying and actually make like a strong and actually execute it, because I claim that his, you know, his form cannot be replicated outside of the printed medium, but I would love for somebody to prove me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, please.
At least interesting to watch people try.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm glad they still are, because I mean,
and it's one of those things where you have seen other, I think, equally crazily done things that have had good good anime adaptations, going to the Hellsing Ultimate OVAs. Those ones came out really cool, and that's from another nearly unadaptable manga.
Berserk 97 is great.
Yep, Berserk 97, as well as a good job. It is definitely a challenge to see it. I'm hopeful for it because I really like the director. It's Hiroshi Nagahama is the director for it.
Well, that's some promise.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that they'll do a good job, and that for the things that maybe don't look as good, because like you said, like they have to deal with their, you know, budgetary constraints and being able to try and do and make this work within not having 100,000 people sitting there drawing swirls until they all get swirl mania. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be the best though? If it would be so great and meta wise, where like if the thing got canned halfway through because everybody went insane drawing all these spirals.
You know, it's ironic you guys talk about this because I didn't know until recently, but Ito was actually a collaborator with Guillermo del Toro and Kojima on Silent Hills, the canceled canceled project.
I just heard about that too.
That is on brand because you think about the kinds of stuff del Toro likes to do. You think about, you know, the ability to invoke true terror in people, which is what Ito does best, and excellence in game design and Hideo Kojima. I don't know if any of you had the opportunity to ever play the PT demo on PS4, like a decade back now. I still have it, my PS4 with it installed on it, because just for that. I'm one of those guys. But yeah, I mean, especially back then, I'm not big on horror, but I had to try playing it because it was such an truly immersive and, you know, terrifying experience. Like, would I ever want to subject myself to it again? No, but it is a one-of-a-kind experience, and it's really unfortunate that Konami had to be Konami and basically get that whole project completely obliterated, even though it was set up to be possibly the greatest horror game ever made. But yeah, you know, that's life.
So let's go back to Ito and horror manga stuff. I think I want to take a slight aside out of Uzumaki and into some more of the one shots, because in some ways they're very interesting. If you want a great collection of one shots, there's Venus in the Blind Spot, I believe that's the title, which is a whole collection. One of the peak ones in there is, I always screw up the title, the Amigara Fault.
Enigma of Amigara Fault.
Yes, the Enigma of Amigara Fault. It's one of those things where I would say, hey, if you want to read one thing if you want to convince someone within like 30 pages that here you're a big fan of horror manga, just say, okay, just read this. And if you don't like this, then you don't like horror and you don't like manga. And I don't know what to do with your life, but it's the worst choice.
A lot of people know about this one, probably without even realizing it.
Yeah, it's really cool. Without giving too much away, basically, there's an earthquake and a fault slips and opens about 20 or 30 feet vertically. And in this fault slip, there are cut in the face of the rock are outlines of people.
Holes.
And holes that go just straight into the rock, like a cookie cutter got pressed through this stone. And then a bunch of people get kind of drawn to this fault area to try, for whatever reason, they just see it and they feel like they have to go there.
Sounds like Made in Abyss.
Yeah, kind of.
yeah, kind of, yeah.
Except more personal, like, I saw my hole on TV. I have to see it.
It's a similar kind of inexplicable obsession that, like, you see in Uzumaki. Basically.
Exactly.
So that's, and that word there, I like that. And I think that's one of the things that Ito does very well, and particularly in one-shot stuff, is that inexplicable word. Maybe it's not that it couldn't be explained, but that it isn't fully explained.
I you know what I'll say is I'll go one step farther, and that it's relatable in a way that makes it terrifying. And that, like, you know, like, you read this thing, oh, this hole, it's I'm looking for the hole that's made for me, right? Like, but, and you think, oh, that doesn't sound that crazy, right? But, like, you think about it, and it's like, I mean, but what if, like, maybe it's just me. I don't know. I can imagine myself being in a situation where it's like being this kind of obsessed with the thing, like, oh, this is mine, and being drawn to it, like, that power, this unknown power, and that kind of gives me the spooks for a lot of Ito's stuff.
I think that's definitely there. The other point that I want to harp on is that he doesn't ever explain the power. And it's not just in this story. This is a good one just to, you know, be an example of it. But there's so many things where it's not it's not explained. Like in the Tomie series, like it's no spoiler that, oh yeah, she grows back. Why? How does that happen? And you don't get the 10-episode scientific explanation of midichlorians in Tomie that allow her to reformulate herself. It's just, well, no, she does that.
He does kind of break this rule in Gyo, and I think that's kind of a bad part about it, but
yeah,
in general, yeah, I agree.
But I also, well, since you mentioned Gyo, I will say that it's also, like, shows that he's willing to experiment and not stick with a formula, which I can respect.
Totally. And there were lots of other things that were similar in Gyo to, like, where he didn't explain them. He didn't explain everything, but...
Yeah, I know. I get what you're saying. I think with Gyo, he was trying to do something. Because Gyo, I think, came right after, as far as, like, when he made it or wrote it, right after Uzumaki. I think it was, like, it was around 2001, 2002. So I think it was, like, all right, I just finished this, and obviously he was lauded for it, and he maybe just... wanted to try, you know, not trying to defend him or anything. I don't think Gyo is his best work. I think it's unilaterally agreed that Uzumaki is his best work by pretty much anybody, and I don't necessarily disagree. I haven't read his whole body, but I certainly enjoyed it. Gyo was fine. I will say that I did not get the same sense of just abject terror that I did in certain chapters of Uzumaki. With Gyo, I think it was like very controlled simmer the whole time, and maybe that's what he wanted. Yeah. Not certain, but yeah, fairly early on in it, you kind of understand what the main MacGuffin is, and I'm like, okay, I guess. And with Gyo, it was almost like he was trying to make it more like a black comedy, because there's definitely a lot more, I would say.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about with the gas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it basically is like an elaborate fart joke.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, huh. And I kind of chuckled when it actually was shown. I'm like, it's messed up, but yeah, I kind of chuckle at it. Where in Uzumaki, I feel like there are certain chapters that are a lot more, like, I would call, like, recovery, where something intense just happened in the previous chapter, and the next chapter is a little bit more mellow, but still... there's just this looming sense of just everything is going haywire, and, you know, and that whole town is going, you know, is spiraling towards doom, pun intended. And like literally the only person that saw it from the beginning was Shuichi, and he just becomes more and more of like almost like an incel as like further you go, and it, like, he just gets more and more deranged almost, because he's just like, I told you all this is gonna happen, and he still sticks around for Kiriya, which, you know, is definitely noteworthy.
Yeah,
but the other one I read was Remina, which is one of his newer works, I believe. I do need this to fact check that, but
is that a one shot collection as well?
Remina is actually, it's more like Gyo, it's a continuous story for like six chapters. Yeah.
That one was 2004 to 2005.
So not even that much newer than Gyo, honestly.
No. So it's only 20 years old now.
Yeah. I believe he won the Eisner for that one, though.
Really?
If I remember right. Yeah. Of all things, like, okay, Remina is fine. I would say Remina is almost a better version of Gyo. If I can, without spoiling much, I would say it's a similar kind of plot, like execution, but the reveal is not really the main thing. It's actually it's more just kind of a background noise compared to like just the kind of the ordeal of the main character, who is Remina. So,
and that is correct in 2020 or 2021, it won an Eisner for best U.S. edition of international material from Asia.
Very specific designation, but
yeah. With U.S. release stuff, it's kind of interesting. I'm just going off of that back to Uzumaki, which actually got released. The U.S. release of it was particularly at the time not that long, where, because it originally, the first volume was released of three volumes, was released in August of 98 in Japan, and the first ed of the US release was October of 2001.
That was reasonably fast back then.
Yeah. Like, I was like, huh. And it's kind of been in and out of print. There was, like, a second major edition in, like, 2007, 2008. So it's been obviously popular enough in the U.S. to keep it coming back around. And then the new series is a Adult Swim thing there. So I assume there's more popularity there. I don't know. I do not know if Uzumaki is one of those things like Trigun that's more popular in the U.S. than it is in Japan.
I wonder.
I don't know.
It might be.
Yeah.
He might be more recognized for his really old, like Tomie might be his most notable in Japan.
I think Tomie is the most, my gut says in Japan, he's more well known for Tomie than for Uzumaki. And I think in some ways, partially just because Uzumaki has fewer volumes and is more of a consolidated story, it's made it much easier to sell in the U.S. market rather than Tomie, which runs on and has a bunch of, it's all just a bunch of one-off story things.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess. I don't have sales numbers in front of me, but my gut would say that doesn't feel that weird, especially given just how many printings and different editions and things they've done of Uzumaki in the U.S.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, no data to back that up, but it certainly would make sense.
With mangas, and we no spoiler stuff here, but and we could continue about the one shot stuff if we wants to, but I always think it's very interesting how he ends chapters and entire stories, from longer ones like Uzumaki and Gyo to shorter like one shots, because so much of the time there's no explanation, and nobody in the story wins.
I feel like that's fitting for yet, horror.
It is, well, it can be, sometimes, but oftentimes in horror, there's, you know, like 80% of the people are gone, but there's the couple of people that survive and are doing all right, and you're like, okay, well, they're going to need a lot of therapy, but, you know, they made it through, at least until the sequel. And in a lot of his stories, that's not the case. So even kind of like reading the one shots and stuff, you're kind of like, I don't know if this is really going to work out for these people. And then it doesn't. And so you're kind of, but I'm trying to understand, because I'm like, like, how do I feel about it that, oh, yep, none of these people in this chapter of Tomie made it out alive. Yep, I'm not surprised.
I can't think of, like, any happy endings in the stuff that I read that wasn't a kind of a dark, happy ending. Like,
I agree with Sam. Yeah, any of the stuff I read, even if there was kind of a happy ending, there was still, like, a massive price paid by a significant number of people to achieve that.
I mean, it's been a long time since I've read it, but I did read the one he did about his cats, so...
Oh, well, that doesn't count.
that's not really horror.
Unless the cats
are, as far
are
as
like...
I know, his cats have not eaten him yet, so yes.
So I'm trying to figure, like, why... Like, frankly, why he's been so successful at being able to do that for so long, and we keep coming back for more beatdowns.
I wonder how he compares to other horror authors. This is where I wish I'd read more horror manga to compare to, because I don't know if he's that unusual, or if, like, he really is something else. Because, I mean, part of his appeal, obviously, that we've talked about is his art is exquisite. It's just really good. And he's good at pacing and everything. Like, all the good traditional manga skills are very good. But yeah, the stories are not happy.
Kind of almost reminds me of 70s art in a way, because it's so line-based and not as heavy on the shading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's definitely stated that Kazuo Umezu is, like, his manga god.
Mm-hmm.
Who is 70s manga hero. sorry, go ahead. Nick had something.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like, at least in Japan, Ito is probably more of mainstream horror, because I don't remember exact titles, but I remember when I was young, I had a family friend who had a significant seinen manga collection, and there was a lot of horror in that, and I've blocked out a lot of that stuff, because I remember, like, it traumatizing me as a child relative to what Ito's stuff is. Not to say that Ito's stuff isn't, you know, nightmare fuel. Plenty of it is. Specifically, the hospital chapter in Uzumaki was like,
oh jeez,
yeah,
I did not sleep well that night. Yeah, that one was pretty rough. But like, I think people in Japan that go for like the really really like lean hard into the horror element, like that stuff is just, it's almost like comparing. I won't even make it that reductive, but it's a lot of the stuff that's truly awful is just like, it's awful on the level that it's just like, why would this be created? Where Ito's is definitely this very finely honed and very carefully thought out and carefully paced thing, where the payoff is definitely a memorable but still at least watchable or viewable horror element, where there's some things I've seen that is just like, oh, why would somebody draw this? Like, just it's just so irredeemable that I can't look at it.
Do you think of that as horror versus gore, or the grotesque versus the build up to it?
I mean, I think a lot of it ties in. Like, I think there a lot of horror uses extreme violence to achieve the end result, and to me that cheapens it, because I think horror should be a psychological thing versus just like a, you know, visceral feeling, you know, if you get what I'm saying. Like, extreme gore is just a kind of like it's an easy way, it's almost cheapening a way to get a reaction out of somebody, right? Because it's just viscerally unpleasant.
It's the manga jump scare.
Yeah, but yeah, not to say Ito doesn't use it at all, but when he uses it, again, the hospital scene, like that one was just, I can't get out of my head. And I think that's the achievement of a true, I would say, savant in the medium.
Yeah, I would say he's not averse to gore, but he doesn't use it gratuitously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He uses it well.
And there's more, I think, feeling of suspense and build-up to it, so that when you get to there in the chapter and you're turning the page and you're like, oh gosh, this is not going to be good. I don't know what this is, but this is going to be bad. And then the guys turn themselves into a spiral.
The only other horror manga that I can think of that I think I read some in the past, but been too long, is Pet Shop of Horrors. That's actually also pretty popular in the US, at least amongst people who were into manga from in the Tokyopop days. That one was...
Well, shoujo and josei horror definitely used to get over here more. It doesn't seem like they're as much of a thing as they used to be, for whatever reason.
I mean, that makes me wonder if maybe really the audience for horror is mostly women.
I could see that. Like, frankly, I got into watching horror movie stuff because my wife was interested in that stuff, and then we both have gotten even more and more into it and watching those things. And there's something, you know, there's the whole psychological stuff of horror, which is interesting in that it's things that are scary, but because it's presented as a story, whether it's in manga or film or game or whatever, you know that it's also controlled.
Right. Especially with manga, so, where you're like Nick was saying earlier, right? You control turning the page.
Yeah, I think probably the only thing that can have more personal control is video games. Because you are then generally interacting with everything and even more of a thing, rather than saying, okay, you know, if a manga video game could it be the same thing, but almost be like, all right, I'm walking down this corridor and you have to decide, oh boy, when I'm going to walk down this, what's going to happen? And, you know, like some of those great scenes in, you know, I remember back to Resident Evil 1 where you're like, oh, there's a corridor. I have to walk down it. Oh gosh, what's going to happen? Oh, and you're just like, oh, this is not going to be good. I don't know what it is, but I know it's not going to be good. And you have no choice but to go.
That reminds me of my favorite moment in Dead Space 2, where there is a corridor where you're like, oh no, something bad will definitely happen in this long corridor. And then nothing happened. And to me, that was like the best moment. I just don't want to derail into games, but yeah, I know what you're meaning.
No, I think it's a totally relevant thing where sometimes you have to have the things that are, it's not always has to, if it's, you have to sometimes get even more results out of your scare if you have the occasional thing where nothing happens when you walk down there.
Right, you just get worked
up. There's power in subverting expectations as long as you don't do it so much that you set up a new expectation.
Right, exactly.
Well, let's take that and think on that for a minite with the Junji Ito stuff. Where, in what cases or points does he subvert expectations that way? I'm thinking particularly in Uzumaki, and I'm trying to think of some of the stories. I don't actually, in my head, I can't really think of any of the chapters in there where things really kind of backed off or there wasn't anything that was furthering or getting, you know, further down the spiral. It always got worse at the end of the chapter.
Well, when it comes to subverting expectations, I would say the one that I was a little surprised at, and this kind of ties into the, you know, no happy endings thing, is I think it's chapter 6, which is Medusa? with the hair. As soon as, I got halfway through and saw that it was going to be, I thought it was, oh, it's Kiria's turn to succumb, is what I thought was going to be, because I was not going to put it past Ito to be like, oh, the heroine isn't, you know, it doesn't have plot armor.
Yeah.
And even towards the end of the chapter, I'm like, oh, is this the moment? And then actually, Shuichi comes and, well, the scissors actually saves her, which I thought, you know, hindsight, it's actually a very sweet moment. Like, I think that's where you really see his, you know, yeah, he's losing his sanity, but the reason he's staying in that wretched town is for Kiria. That's very, very obvious by that chapter, I feel. And
yeah,
I thought it was that chapter, I was expecting it to be the end. And like, what I found interesting was that for the next few chapters, she had the bob cut because
you
had to lop off all her hair. I'm like, the continuity is nice. And that's kind of where that's why I drew that parallel earlier to Takahashi, because Takahashi does that a lot too, where she executes a certain plot element and it's not necessarily front and center, but she stays consistent with it regardless because, you know, because it happens, she wants to, you know, have it be omnipresent because that's how, you know, things are. So, but yeah, I'd say that's probably the one chapter where I kind of was, it kind of surprised me. I was like, oh, he does know how to kind of, you know, turn something that's terrible into at least bittersweet instead.
Yeah, I had forgotten, but I actually had that same thought of like, oh, now it's her turn. Okay, she's not immune. And then, yeah, she didn't.
Yeah, I definitely had that same thought as well.
Okay. We had some other thoughts that people had some discussions on themes and stuff within Uzumaki. And as I understand it, his inspiration for Uzumaki was from, particularly in Japanese culture, where he says that, like, oh, the spiral is always seen as like this really good thing and this great idea, and he kind of went off the idea as like, okay, well, what if it wasn't? And then he ran with that of, okay, what if spirals aren't good? And I'm still amazed that he didn't actually get full-on spiral mania in drawing it, because it's one of the things that's just like, the art in there is so crazy, where Kirie's hair is just, it's all lines, it's all spirals, it's, spirals are
all the rage.
They're everywhere, and they're not there, and there's all the lines, and you see every single thing.
The thing that was interesting to me about the spiral stuff was how he was able to wring so much out of just that one concept of spirals. What can I do with spirals? And it was just surprising how every chapter there was a, oh, okay, this is, you know, like, oh, snails. Yeah, sure, that's spirals. Pottery, yeah, okay.
Somehow, every time things manage to spiral just a little farther out of control.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think they can get any crazier, and then next chapter, wait, what?
And I will say that there were some misses, like, well, maybe miss isn't the right word, but I liked the hair one, but the hair one felt a lot like comic relief until the ending, of course.
Kind of.
Was like,
but
you know,
I think it was, I was saying earlier, that's like the respite, right?
Because yeah, true.
It was pretty heavy, like, there's some really heavy chapters.
Yes.
In there. And I feel like the follow-up one to the hair one, the one with the jack-in-the-box guy, was definitely like comic relief.
Because, yeah.
Like, there was like a giant, the gag at the end was like, oh, it turns out it was this automobile spring inside the body that was making he wasn't cursed or haunted. Like, huh. And that kind of stuff is, I think, also kind of what, again, reminds me of Takahashi. Like, obviously, she's generally speaking a lot more comedy than Ito is, but she will oftentimes throw gags into otherwise serious moments just to kind of, you know, lighten the mood.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot, but not totally. Certainly, she's done her own darker work.
Mermaid's Forest is quite dark. I would say there's a lot of parallels to that in Ito's work for sure. 100%.
Yeah. The other thing that I will say that I noticed in both the short story Venus and the Blind Spot and Uzumaki and Gyo both did this at various points, and I think it's kind of a flaw that I think he has, that sometimes he telegraphs a little too much, I feel like, and it kind of kills some of the surprise. Like, I'm not a person who tries to think too far ahead because I enjoy being surprised, but there are times when he lays things out. And I'm not sure how to say some of these without spoiling too much, but he'll point something out. He'll make sure the characters say something. I'll just say,
just a little too obvious.
Yeah, like, oh, a character will be dying and say, well, I'm gonna go die off frame here somewhere, right? And you're like, well, okay, obviously that means he's not dead, right? Like, so. And
yeah,
lo and behold, later on,
one of my friends who is into stuff, but he's probably like a level 3 otaku person, but he read Uzumaki, and he always has good insights on these sorts of things, and he said that the American horror psyche is about almost, I forget his exact words, so I'll butcher them, but kind of about purity. It's, you know, it's about the pure high school girl who is saved versus the horrible thing. And then he says, you know, particularly coming from reading Uzumaki and stuff, is, you know, he's like, the Japanese horror psyche is more about the fear of, I think he said, transformation or becoming something else or different. And I thought that was kind of an interesting perspective.
I could see that. Like, I mean, in Gyo, the main, I already forget the main female's protagonist's name, but that was like her fear was transforming and losing her beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And everybody is transforming in Uzumaki into something else, something horrifying.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. If I think about it, like, almost all of the horror in his works, or maybe not all of it, but like a really large number of them have to do with kind of transforming or contorting yourself into some shape, some unnatural shape.
And you can certainly move that on to other things like Berserk has that all throughout it as well, even though it's not strictly horror, but
I would say Berserk is like at least 70% horror.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I think we could come back, because there's so many great Japanese horror movies that I don't think are quite that way. There's like the Ju-on and Ringu, which are both awesome.
Not to interrupt, but I will say, going back to the kind of fear of transformation, I will say Remina probably breaks that trend. And that's the most I want to say, since I think I'm the only one that read it. But it's short. I would, especially Sam, I would recommend reading Remina, because I think it's an interesting comparison to Gyo in a lot of ways.
They opened it
but
up.
Not
so.
Necessarily. Okay. Well, yeah, it's short. It's only, I think it's as short as Gyo, if not shorter.
Oh, so way shorter. 6 chapters.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one like sittingable, but yeah, that one definitely is, at least for the main character, the titular character, transformation really isn't the thing, but there's a whole heck of a lot of other things that go wrong is what I'll say. So, I enjoyed it. I think it was interesting, again, just kind of change of pace compared to his other works. I would say, if anything, this one feels almost inspired by why am I blanking? The famous author that does like Eldritch horror stuff.
Lovecraft,
thank you. Yeah, I would say it's very similar. I think it's his take on doing something Lovecraftian is kind of my interpretation.
Oh, cool.
So
I could see that.
Yeah, I would say if like after 2 chapters, I mean, no, you don't dig it, then you probably won't like the end of it. But if you can, you know, it's not tough to get through in one sitting. I was able to do it during one of my longer flights. I was plowing through a bunch of his stuff. So
yeah, I'll definitely check it out. Yeah.
As far as American horror taste, I just want to note that while it's not the biggest area, body horror has certainly been a thing in American horror film. Look at like David Cronenberg stuff.
That's fair enough. Yep, it could be one of those things where yeah, they're all on sliding scales of various interests, and kind of like, all right, well, this thing is much more prevalent on the bell curve in U.S. versus Japan. Yeah. Okay, so we are wrapping up time here. So I want people to put out either kind of a favorite one shot or a chapter or something from Uzumaki or whatever. I will go ahead and put forward The Snail, which the Japanese titles are great. Gosh, I wish I could get read it, because it's the Japanese title for that, The Snail, is Hito Mai Mai. And a bunch of the other chapters feel like they're very rhymey titles, like The Black Lighthouse in Japanese is Kuroi Todai.
Oh.
Or Kuroi Todai. So it almost kind of sounds a little bit rhymey, which is kind of funny. So I'm going to put out The Snail. Is that one, just anytime I'm about to read it, I'm just like, oh gosh, I'm so creeped out. I've read it 3 times and I'm going to be creeped out even more the 4th time I read it. Let's go with Nick.
I can't remember the title of the chapter, but the hospital one is going to forever haunt me for the rest of my days.
I believe that's The Umbilical Cord.
Yes, that is. Also probably the most unsettling title. Yeah, it is The Umbilical Cord. Just everything in that chapter was from start to finish was probably the most horrifying chapter for me. It was very unsettling the whole time. I felt uncomfortable, and it just got worse and worse until you get to the point at the end and you see I believe it's her cousin on the cranium. Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah, I remember when I was reading it, I let out an audible Jesus Christ when I got to that page, because that was something. So yeah, I'll have to go with Umbilical Cord. I'll never ever get that out of my mind.
All right, let's go with Mike.
I'm gonna have to go with The Snakes, because that's gonna take some getting out of my mind.
Yeah. The Twisted Souls.
That one was weird.
Yeah, that one is creepy in a whole different way.
Was that the faux Romeo and Juliet chapter?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that one's a very close second for me. Yeah, I love that one.
All right, Sam.
I'll mention 2 of them. One, because it's not technically Ito, The Human Chair, which is from the Venus in the Blind Spot.
Yep.
That's a good one. It's an Edogawa Ranpo. story that he basically just turned into a manga is really well done.
It's fabulous. Yeah.
And I love it because it's like, you know exactly what it is. And it's still
that,
like,
that the title is unsettling enough.
Yeah, exactly. And it's exactly that. And, but it's the way they, the story goes and everything. And it's just, it's illustrated really well. Executed very, very well. The other one I'll mention is, I guess, just from that is, I mean, all the other things everybody else has mentioned, I also agree are excellent, good examples and unsettling. But Venus in the Blind Spot, the titular chapter is pretty good. I think it's different than a lot of the other stuff. I think slightly in that it feeds on a, I don't know, different kind of thing than his things usually do. It's like very, it's more grounded, I think, which is interesting.
Okay. And I do have a kind of a quick follow-up from Nasubi, which was a while ago now, which is apparently in Japan and also I think in the UK and many other places, that police are reassigned across the country with some regularity. I didn't actually look up how this happens, but that was a... but I guess the US is almost kind of an outlier where police are... you know, hired by the local department and don't get moved around. So, with Nasubi saying that he, you know, moved around a lot as a kid because his dad was a police officer, it sounds crazy to us in the U.S., but apparently many other places, they'd be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So, that's right there. Next time, we are going to go back to one of my all-time favorite wells, the Pat LaBour well. We'll be watching the movie Pat LaBour 2, or Pat LaBour 2 the movie, or Pat LaBour the movie 2, whatever you want to call it. Actually, I did not do a good host job, and I didn't see if it's... I don't actually think it is up reasonably available streaming anywhere, which is ridiculous.
Criminal.
But... yeah, but it is easily purchasable, and everyone should just purchase it and all of Pat LaBour. You can just get the whole Pat LaBour box for like $70, and that's probably the best $70 you'll ever spend. Tentatively, after Pat LaBour, we will be doing the Berserk TV version of the movie, which is up on Crunchyroll, so if anyone wants to do some studying ahead of time and start watching a little bit of that, tentatively we say we could always reserve the right to change. That would be after Pat LaBour 2.
For clarification, that is Berserk the Golden Age arc.
Thank you. Yes. Not the 2016 series, and not please Berserk 90, and not Berserk 97. And the movies were adapted into a TV series thing. They were not edited for any sort of actual
content.
Yeah, like
they actually were given a bit of a censorship. Polishing for the first, I would say, three episodes. They got a pretty significant upgrade in the CG.
Okay. So tentatively, that's after Pat LaBour 2. And with that, I say thanks for listening, and until next time, this is AMO Kenzoku saying. Uzumaki. Saraba.